step inside the tribe as our market experts share their boots on the ground experience from the front lines of freight tech's emergence. I'm Tim Dooner, and this is Freight Waves Insiders.
Welcome back to the show where we go inside the career journeys and brand stories of the people who make freight happen. I'm Dooner, and I got some great guests today who are on the forefront of AI in trucking and in freight. It is a father and son multi-generational team that is digitizing freight. It's Warren and his son Daniel Powell. They are the co-founders of Optimal Dynamics, a company that's been around 7 years now, moving into its 8th year. So first of all, I'm in a startup. Congratulations, guys, making it to that 7-year mark, that 5-year mark, that 6-year mark, that 7-year mark. Huge.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been quite a journey to get the company to this stage, but it's been nice to have a good kind of track record behind us.
Hey, Daniel, I can't help but notice your shirt, and you guys sent me one of those as swag, I think it was about a year ago, and it came, and it's about a size too big, but it's worked out perfectly, because as you know, those shirts are incredibly comfortable, and it's become my go-to sleeping shirt every night, and you can ask my wife, I bug her all the time, I'm like, have you done the laundry yet? I want to throw on my OD shirt, because it's like that much more comfortable than my other shirts, I'm not even kidding. If you can get your hands on Optimal Dynamics shirt, I recommend getting like a wear-out one, but get yourself one just a little bit bigger to wear outside.
That's great to hear. Amazing. We love it.
Warren, we haven't heard from you yet. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'll tell you, after spending all those decades at the university getting this technology rolling, and in the background, a few decades of raising this young gentleman right next to you, to see all this come together, where all the work that I did at the university is coming together because I have this son who has business skills that I never had, is really an incredible experience. And I love the fact that I'm watching my technology move forward, but I'm especially loving the fact that I'm watching this company take off. And all the skills that Danny has brought to build up this company, arrange the funding, put the pieces together. My wife, you know, would say, you know, yeah, but Warren, I mean, you did all the work. And I'm like, no, not really. We built the engine at the university. And I like to talk about the difference between building an engine and building a car. But there's also a big difference between building a car and building a company. Mm. And not only has Danny been building the car, he's been building the company. I mean, I'm sorry, we're about to close in on 50 people. And we've got all the different dimensions, and that's a lot of fun. And speaking as an academic, I mean, we don't have any training in that.
Well, Danny, he's doing a good pitch here, at least on you. So he did the elevator pitch on you. How about you give me like a 30-second elevator pitch in the audience here on what OD is?
Yeah, so the best way to think of us is the decision layer of logistics. So we help today mostly trucking companies make better decisions, and these decisions come from how to plan from a year out, what trucks to purchase, what bids to bid on, down to automating their execution, what loads to accept, which drivers should dispatch loads. And we work with companies that are mid to large size for hire carriers and private fleets and dedicated fleets for consumer goods and retail companies.
Well, I mean, as Hot Rod Rowdy Piper used to say, an idol of mine, just when you think you know the rules, I change the game. And you know, you think about like predictive and data and all of those things, right, in freight, and we deal with that in Sonar, and this black swan event, COVID-19, happened, and it's radically changed the face of freight, and this is ongoing perpetual peak season that it seems like that we're on this looming impending disaster that is not only bad on this end, but it seems like it might be horrible on the other side too. Once all this stuff gets here, demand subsides and people are stuck with inventory and routing and all of the problems that may occur. So I got to tell you, what has it been like these past 2 years? What are you working on right now in this snapshot of time?
You know, not much different, but it's really just pushing forward our message so much more. A lot of the message that we're getting across is how do you get systems to plan under uncertainty? And this whole idea of resilient self-healing operations. And so when you look at all these amazing applications, Sonar being one of them, but the number of data feeds that they have out there, finally giving customers tools so that they can ask the hard questions. They can ask, what if this subsides? What if this increases? What if we do this or that? Understand in a safe digital environment, and then use the same tools to support their operations. And so it has only supercharged the same exact path that we set out. And it's, you know, it doesn't seem like it's stopping. I think we all thought that this whole phase would have slowed down a year ago. But I think we're starting to get used to that. This is potentially just the completely new norm, which is, you know, very exciting for us. It's a unfortunate cause to create a silver lining. You know, we would have never wanted this to happen, but it is a silver lining. And we're seeing companies that never had an ounce of supply chain technology anywhere on their top 50 priorities. And now they're in the top five or number one, because they're realizing if they aren't investing in the fundamental underlying technology to support systems like ours, or technology like ours to support better decisions, they're not just going to potentially fall behind, they may go out of business. And I think that severity of the recourse of not making these investments for the first time is not just slightly falling behind, but it's totally, potentially completely losing your ability to run as a company.
No doubt. And, you know, you can just look at the marketplace and M&I and M&A and these venture deals that have been happening in the freight tech space. In this week alone, it's been wild. Last week was wild. And we know of a few impending deals that's coming through that are embargoed that we haven't even been able to put out there yet in the market. So it is a crazy, incredible time. But this is also a show about people. And you guys are the founders who put this together. So now we're going to find out how you got there. And we're going to do that by throwing Warren in a time machine. You're 16 years old now, Warren. What did you want to be when you grew up? Did you think you'd be running an AI, you know, trucking planning company with your son over there?
Well, so first of all, he's running the company. I always knew that I was good at school. So, you know, I was the academic nerd in high school. So I knew that. I also knew I liked to teach. I had a physics course, and the teacher loved to let me take the class. And I just loved passionately the ability to stand in front of a group of people. So I got through college. I did well as an undergrad at Princeton. But when I went off to graduate school at MIT, that's when I really started getting into this trucking stuff. And I was at MIT I arrived in 1978. 1980, a lot of people don't understand today that prior to 1980, the government ran all the trucking companies. Everything was government regulated. If you wanted to haul wheat from St. Louis to Chicago, you needed a certificate. If you wanted to haul bread from Chicago back to St. Louis, that was a different certificate, and they would tell you how much to charge. It took them until 1980 for the economists to win out and go, okay, that wasn't working, let's not do that anymore. I mean, it did work back in the 1930s and 40s, because back in those days, nobody could run a trucking company. They kept going out of business. So in graduate school, I saw this happening. And I said, okay, I think I want to be part of this trucking stuff. And there was one professor there. And so I got into trucking, but it was really my first year as an academic that one of my old office mates who had gone off to work for Schneider National, they already had some models, but their models were either very reactive, what driver to assign to a load, or they had a model that would plan 7 days out, but you had to pretend that you knew the future. And they hired somebody who had a master's in operations research. And he knew what this crazy word stochastic meant. And he said, Warren, we're pretending like we know the future, and we don't. And he said, Warren, it's stochastic. And for the next decade, I'm like, oh, wow, everybody knows about stochastic. But it took me a couple decades before we really landed the projects and figured out how to solve these problems, because if you went to the academic literature, there wasn't a book out there that would say, oh, here's how to solve this problem. So it was like one thing after another. To a large extent, it was just reacting to deregulation and having an industry stand up and saying, hey, we could use some help.
Wait, hold on. I got to raise my hand. What did you say? Stochastic? Statastic? Sarcastic? What does that mean?
So stochastic means uncertain. So when you're planning the loads in the future, we don't know what loads are in the future. We don't know what the shipper's going to do. So when you have something, like imagine a coin flip. When you flip a coin, I don't know what's going to come up, heads or tails. So the outcome of that coin flip is stochastic. And the academic geeks like that word. People in industry don't. But that's how it was put to me by Schneider National. And the academics love this, but it all has to do with blending decisions with uncertainty. So we're actually pretty good at making decisions where I know everything. That's called deterministic optimization. And we all know about uncertainty, but when you mix uncertainty with decisions that you have to make under uncertainty, that's where things get ugly.
And
it took me a good part of my career to even figure out how to write that down.
Well, you—I mean, you had a lot of time at Princeton. You had a lot of tenure there. You were there for—I believe it was for 40 years, Daniel.
Just about 40 years.
I noticed something, Daniel. Though I was looking in your background, and you didn't go to Princeton. You went to Elon. So, did you hear enough of the stochastic speech when you were growing up at the dinner table? What was the decision behind going to Elon versus Princeton?
You know, I most of our dinner table conversations were probably around about baseball as a kid. But there was enough peppered in that crafted my kind of engineering background. I was always the kid building robots in the basement, but I also wanted to be Gordon Gekko. And so Princeton didn't have a true finance department. And so I went
to business school. We don't have business.
So I went to school to be a business and finance major and started my kind of career path in that way. And then as I got more and more into my career, I wanted to work back on these more richer physical problems. And so I sort of backed into the problem of starting a company rather than, you know, working on this problem for 5 years and say, hey, I now want to start a company about this. I just wanted to work on cooler, more physical problems and also was, you know, peppered with this sort of information for a lot of my life.
I've got to tell you, you hear people who do startups talk about all the stuff they go through. Danny has been through it all. All the little stories. If you go back to right after he graduated and I said, hey, Dan, I've got this software sitting in the library. You know, let's see what we can do with it. The process of getting that software from the very, very early stages, I mean, he was one of the earliest people licensing software from Princeton. Princeton is fairly new to the game of starting companies. And then you walk through all the very early startups and the first going out to customers and presenting and getting the very first little bit of funding. I think the very, very first little bit of funding came from me stuffing money in his wallet. But he got this early seed grant that kind of got things rolling, and then he got I don't know what that second round is, Danny, called an angel, whatever. So it was sort of this slow taking off. And I will tell you, one of Danny's biggest skills in getting a startup going was patience. Because there were times when if he was pushing too hard, it would have died. He knew when to push and he knew when to wait. And we had to make the usual adjustments that everybody has to do, but I'm hoping to get to the point when the dust clears and everything's working and he can really sort of write his memoirs. I don't know if he'll ever do it. Maybe I will.
Ghostwrite them. Well, Daniel, how did this come up? He kind of alluded to it. He said that, you know, at Princeton, I had this software lying around in the library. Is that what happened? Because it looked like you started the company pretty quick after school. So what's the genesis story? What was the formation? How did it come together?
Yeah, I started actually getting into the energy industry. And the research lab had been doing work in energy. And so I was going to work, you know, apply my finance background into kind of the energy industry and some of the work that they're doing. And that was sort of when I was first exposed. So after I graduated, it was starting to kind of have this idea of starting a company. But the initial initiative wasn't to start, you know, what Optimalytics looks like today. It was, let's just take some cool tools and bring it out to industry in more of a kind of consulting way. And I think it was around 2017 where we sort of changed the tone of the company to actually build a scalable, you know, SaaS-based business. And from there, we've had really good velocity. So it was one of those stories of, you know, the idea of OD was not to build a hyper-growth, you know, SaaS-based AI company. It was, let's help people make better decisions with data. And, you know, the timing of the logistics industry with our tools, with the venture industry, with the ability for these companies or the willingness of these companies to adopt this type of technology all sort of formed around that 2017 mark. And that's where we kind of, you know, turned the ship in a very specific direction and then hit the go button.
Well, Daniel, I understand. I'm multi-generational business. My dad is my biggest mentor. Every time I need guidance on something, he's the first person I go to and he's the first person I listen to. Warren, what kind of guidance were you giving Danny along the way? And especially when he wanted to make this pivot?
Let me tell you what guidance I was not giving him. I was not giving him any business guidance whatsoever. I am not a businessman. So
it's a Princeton education.
I was pretty much there with this big analytic toolbox. And the funniest thing is this is my third company. And the first two companies were sort of rocky. I'm almost convinced that you just couldn't start companies in this area back in the 80s and 90s. So everything really came together. I will tell you, having started two other companies, absolutely the hardest thing to do is to find a good CEO. Oh my gosh. I have friends at other schools that have business schools. Princeton doesn't have a business school, so I don't have a natural source of business talent. And Danny often likes to give the pitch that says, well, I had to grow my own. But I will tell you, the business side comes entirely from him. I have no business background. The whole notion of a SaaS-based company came entirely from Dan. My prior experience was more consulting firms where we'd go in and do custom projects. And there were times when Danny had to very firmly say, no, we're not going to do that because it's not consistent with a software company. So I'm going to say the business side and raising the funding and going to the VCs, he didn't learn any of that from me. I don't know. He just got that out of the sky, you know.
Well, so we I'm have, glad you we got a, that out. Go
we have a nice division of labor because I'm very much the analytics guy. You know, you show me a problem having to do with decisions and uncertainty and whatnot, and I can handle anything now. I'm really good. But if you ask me business questions, raising funding, I mean, I remember once asking, where in the world do you find all these VCs? I mean, so we mastered the fine art of meeting with VCs. Danny would do the whole sales pitch. I would usually talk for about a minute so they could see that the professor can actually talk. And then it would go back to Danny doing the pitch. And he played me like a violin. It was really good.
Danny, I love it. I love everything Warren's saying over here. You know, and one thing that I took note of that he mentioned was that you had to go through a lot to get where you are now, though. And I think the most interesting thing about founders is, you know, the wins are great, but you don't get to the wins without the pivots and losses and learning process and all of those kind of things. So what were some of those challenges that you had to face along the way to get to where Optimal Dynamics is now?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've been fortunate, at least since 2017, to have a pretty consistent path of what we've been trying to build. But how to articulate the message is difficult when we're working on a problem that people are thinking of as 10 years down the road. So being able to deliver it in a concise way that, you know, people who have never spent any time, so, you know, the funding crowd, in this industry, so they understand why this problem is so big and impactful, and then also be able to kind of explain it to the customers. So we are definitely, I sort of joke that our company is halfway between a widget and a self-driving car company. And so when you're trying to build a business that, you know, is predicated on, you know, quarter by quarter growth numbers with real revenue, and we're not just building, you know, self-driving cars that, you know, are sort of 10 years away, you have to be able to tell a story that it matters today, but also realize that these companies are building for a five-year future and really making an early investment. And so being able to kind of get that messaging down in a way that everyone understood was difficult and took a lot of time because it also adapted and changed as the landscape changed, as new entrants into the market changed, as COVID hit. You know, all of these messaging components have adapted and changed throughout the years. And that's probably was the most difficult part to get people bought in. You know, now we're sort of past that stage and it's all about making sure we execute ruthlessly. But that initial, I met someone recently who I also met 5 years ago, and he was just so excited that where we were today, because he was like, you know, 5 years ago, you were the two guys pitching this vision that no one even thought of. And no one understood it. And now everyone's kind of finally getting the aha moment. So that was probably the biggest thing that we first had to crack before we even get down to, you know, deploying the technology at customers.
Danny, I think that's a story that we see a lot, especially in freight tech, because you're talking about an older industry. And I think that what had to mature was not just tech for a lot of companies, but also their messaging and marketing so that their partners that they wanted to lure in would be receptive to this kind of stuff. You talked about that long view and how difficult it can be sometimes, especially in what can be a very transactional business like freight. Warren, you are an AI evangelist, and you know people have all sorts of thoughts and ideas of AI. A lot of it fear, sometimes not the most educated, but you know, like Amazon, you see the Astrobot walking around with cameras on its head and a fire pad for a face, and you know they want to release a drone around your house, and you know everyone's seen Terminator and Skynet and stuff like that. So, what is the state of AI? Is it something that we should fear, or is it something that we just need to understand more?
Well, first of all, absolutely, there is nothing to fear from AI. The fear comes from these hyper-vivid imaginations of computers taking over the world. Trust me, we are so far away from that, it's not funny. Now, I'm glad that you raised this, because first of all, there's a lot of confusion about what we mean by AI, because AI in the 1960s and 70s was rule-based. Hey, you know, if you had red meat for dinner, you should drink red wine. But when they tried to apply it to, say, a health application where you say, oh, if you're male and you're this old and you have this sugar and you have this and this and this and this and this, therefore you should be get this treatment, the problems quickly get complicated and you can't do rule-based. So it just died. In the 1990s, they didn't really call it AI, but they had this field called optimization. So this is scheduling airlines, but it's scheduling airlines for next year, where we just have a plan and everything's deterministic. And that was a great breakthrough. But then they tried to apply it to, say, a supply chain problem, and it just failed because it couldn't handle uncertainty. So early 2000s, they had this great breakthrough called voice recognition and pattern recognition, and they called that AI. Now, that's really machine learning, but it's a very specific type of machine learning. And they had this tool called neural networks that's very powerful, but for a very specific application. Here's a picture. Is it a flower? Is it a person? Here's a voice recording. What are they asking for? And it was a huge breakthrough. And suddenly they thought, oh, my God, I actually met a startup that thought that they could use that technology to dispatch trucks. I mean, it was laughable. That technology is good for very specific things, but not making decisions, okay? It's good for pattern recognition. So the decision space is really where we're headed in the next evolution. Now, the computer scientists have gotten really excited with this thing they call reinforcement learning, and they use it for playing computer Go, and that was a great breakthrough in chess and whatnot. And they're saying, look, you know, hey, we can play these computer games. And there's a huge community now out there playing computer games and robotics. So the difference between that and running a trucking company is dramatic. First of all, I'm sorry, but playing computer Go, there's no uncertainty, and you always know the state of the board. I know where everybody's pieces are. In trucking, you had this issue of where's the driver, what's he want to do, how's the market going to respond to prices. We don't know the state of the world. But also, when I assign a driver to the load, he wants to know that he's going to get home, which means I got to plan 2, 3, 4 days in the future, and I don't know what's going to happen there. So that's where we get that intermingling. Now, as far as computers making decisions, we're trying to get to the point where computers really help a human. We may be able to replace some fairly low-level decision-making, like dispatching trucks type of thing, but we still had the issue of Bobby doesn't want to go there, or Billy only, you know, drives faster. These things that the human dispatcher knows that the computer doesn't. And I have a feeling the computer is never going to perfectly know the state of the world. So we can get in there and help people make decisions, and we can do planning. So things like simulating drivers in the future, I'm sorry, a human just can't do that. You need a computer to do that. And when you want to say, hey, that load for 5 days from now, we can move that, it's very hard for a human to plan 5 days into an uncertain future. So these are the places where the computer really helps. And then there's a whole pile of areas where, I'm sorry, sales and marketing and, you know, getting on the phone with a customer, yeah, we're nowhere near that. You know, that's... There's still places you just leave the human there because they're good at it.
Well, Daniel, since we talked about the bad side and you talked us through that, tell us about the good side. We have a few minutes left here. Sell us on Optimal Dynamics. What kind of decisions can you make now for the people that you're helping, especially in this shipping crisis?
Yeah, we work, once again, so any company that is a for-hire carrier, usually 75 trucks and up to the, you know, the largest fleets in the nation, and any sort of company that's running a dedicated fleet or a private fleet, more on the shipper side, we're helping them out with decisions that go from year out strategic planning. Where should I hire my drivers? What types of drivers should I hire? What freight should I bid on? Where should I build my dedicated fleets? down to the more automated process of how do I proactively respond to load tenders? Should I use my brokerage capacity for this freight, or should I use my asset capacity, down to executing the driver dispatch function? And so we have a really robust toolkit that handles the entire spectrum of making decisions in trucking. And it's a huge problem, but the tools are finally to a point where they can make actionable decision with the data that mostly everyone has today. And so it's not a point of maybe we'll have this data in 10 years. You know, the logic's there now, the data's there now, and the process and product is also there, where we can identify, you know, tens of millions of dollars, in some case ROI, in the first couple of weeks, and also have tools to help execute on these lofty goals. And so it's a really exciting time for us, but it's also a really exciting time for our customers. And, you know, if there's a question that you're asking on that executive level decision and you're trying to figure out the impact to your logistics operation, you know, we have the tools to answer those questions.
So how do people reach out to learn more?
I would say go to our website, optimaldynamics.com. There's a lot of good information. Also, you can go to our LinkedIn page. We keep it fairly active, and we also have a Medium site. And, you know, feel free to reach out, and we'd be happy to spend some time with you and talk about your problems. And also, we offer up a free proof of concept of our solution. And so the best way to ask of, you know, what is all this AI technology, you know, our feedback there is, don't look at the guy down the street. Let's focus on what the impact would be with your data. And so we always do these with our customers, and it's a great opportunity for people to learn about these types of products.
And what about you, Warren? Are you still educating the young minds of America?
I've moved on. I took early retirement. 39 years was enough. 250 publications. I mean, what are you going to do? The great goal in life is 300. So it allowed me to finish my book. That'll be coming out next year, called Reinforcement Learning and Stochastic Optimization. But the ability to work with my students who've gone on to help Optimal Dynamics and see this go to the field, now that's new and exciting. I mean, I'm sorry, I love teaching, and the students at Princeton are great, but to be able to actually see the technology go into industry, I mean, how do you compete with that? And to work with your own son taking it there, and plus my former students, I'm sorry, that was just way more interesting than, you know, teaching yet another course and grinding through some more papers.
Gentlemen, thank you for letting us step inside your world today. Folks, if you like this show, you can find it wherever you get your podcast. Just look up FreightWaves Insiders. If you want to feed with every single FreightWaves podcast all in one convenient place, look up FreightCast. You'll also find my other show, What the Truck, on there. Subscribe to the What the Truck newsletter to get the latest in the Dooniverse. That's FreightWaves.com/WTT. I can't believe I just said Dooniverse. Will somebody kick me? And thank you to all of you, Warren and Daniel, for myself. Take care and God bless.